From NPR News, this is special coverage of Election Night 2012. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. Polls are now closed in the big three battleground states, Virginia, Florida, and Ohio.
Close contests with voters divided.
You know, I'm pro-choice, but yet I'm conservative fiscally. So I voted for Romney. And honestly, it's one of those things that you just have to go with your heart and go with your gut.
We'll also be watching the night's big Senate results.
In Massachusetts, all eyes are on the battle for the seat that was long held by Ted Kennedy.
Scott Brown is not the independent that he claims himself to be. He's very conservative. I really respect Elizabeth Warren, and I think she is who she says she is.
This is special coverage of Election Night 2012 from NPR News.
Melissa, the polls have now closed in several states, and there are some results that we can talk about and forecast a winner in.
Many states. I think we're up to 26 states whose polls have closed at this hour, and we can now say that the home states of both Barack Obama and Joe Biden have gone for those candidates, Illinois and Delaware.
No surprises.
Also,
there.
The District of Columbia, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, Maryland, and Connecticut, also in Barack Obama's column of polls closing at 8 o'clock. And for Mitt Romney, Alabama, Oklahoma, Mississippi, along with states that closed earlier, West Virginia, South Carolina, Kentucky, Indiana, a state that had gone for Barack Obama 4 years ago, very narrowly, and Georgia.
Now, the three biggest battleground states, Ohio, Florida, and Virginia,
that we just mentioned,
polls have all closed, and we're not about to project a winner in the presidential race, but in the Florida Senate race.
We can project a winner there, and it's the incumbent Bill Nelson, the Democrat, who is projected to defeat his challenger Connie Mack, the Republican there. And in Vermont, the independent Bernie Sanders reelected in Vermont.
With us now, NPR's Mara Liasson and our national political correspondent. Mara, what do you make of it so far?
Well, it looks like it's going to be a close race, just like the polls told us it might. We're really waiting for the first big state, which might be Virginia. The polls closed at 7 o'clock, although the State Board of Elections delayed reporting until 8 because there were such long lines, they said anybody who got in line by 7 would still be allowed to vote. So we should be getting some results from Virginia, but I think that's the kind of first domino. If Mitt Romney wins Virginia, then we move on to Ohio. But if he doesn't, it means his climb has just become incredibly much steeper. And we're looking, obviously, at those suburban counties like Prince William County, where the president racked up huge wins in 2008. See if Romney can eat into those.
These
markets.
Are the suburban counties of northern Virginia, just outside Washington, D.C., which are either big Democratic strongholds, Arlington, City of Alexandria, Fairfax County, pretty strong. And then there are these farther out exurban counties, Prince William and Loudoun.
Right. Prince William, President Obama beat John McCain 58-42% in 2008. That's a huge margin. If Romney has any hope of winning, he needs to shrink that considerably. Not win there, probably can't win there, but certainly do much better than John McCain.
That's why a lot of political eyes are waiting to see those numbers from these far-out suburban counties in northern Virginia. Last day, Mitt Romney traveled to Pennsylvania today. What should we make of that strategy?
I think that it's a backup plan, because if he can't win Ohio, he needs another big electoral state like Pennsylvania with 20 electoral votes. Ohio has 18. If he doesn't win Ohio, he's got to win something else to replace it with, and Pennsylvania is a pretty good candidate. The Romney campaign felt that of the three blue states that were getting tighter at the end, Minnesota, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, their best shot was in Pennsylvania. Now, Republicans have often felt this way. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a dream to get Pennsylvania to turn it red.
You're saying Pennsylvania has broken some Republican hearts.
Yes, Pennsylvania has broken some Republican hearts, but the polls did close there. Democrats still have a very big registration advantage in Pennsylvania.
Okay, thanks, Mara.
Thank you.
And now to NPR's Brian Naylor, who's in Richmond, Virginia, at the Virginia Democratic Party event. And, Brian, we just heard Mara talk about the fact that voting has been extended in Virginia because of the long lines there. What else can you tell us about what you're hearing?
Well, I've heard that there are long lines. I've seen some of them. People where the polls close at 7, but anyone in line up at that point was eligible to vote, so they're going to wait and report on the results.
We're hearing some cheers behind you. Anything significant
about
that?
The big TV screens are on, and so they're showing the different states that are being projected by different networks.
Yeah.
And
nothing about Virginia in particular.
Nothing about Virginia in particular. By all accounts, it's a very close race. I'm here at the Tim Kaine election party, and the Kaine folks are optimistic. They say that their word is that they got their sporadic Democrats to turn out, and at higher levels than the sporadic Republican turnout.
Yeah.
But you know, all of this turnout stuff, I had a wise editor once told me you have to kind of take it with a grain of salt until we actually see the numbers.
And you're talking there, Brian, about the Senate race. This is the seat the Democrat Jim Webb is retiring, and you have two former governors, Tim Kaine, the Democrat, and George Allen, also a former senator, competing for that seat. And by all accounts, that is going to be a very close one, just like the presidential race in Virginia.
It's going to be a very close race. You know, there's been so much outside money spent here, $53 million from outside groups spent on this Virginia Senate race, and the candidates themselves raised another $30 million or so.
Yeah.
So there have been lots of ads. And I was surprised, even today I was hearing ads around Richmond and seeing ads on TV for the Romney campaign. Paul Ryan was here, the vice presidential candidate in Richmond today. So clearly the Romney folks are fighting to the end.
Okay, NPR's Brian Naylor at Democratic headquarters in Richmond, Virginia. Brian, thanks so much.
Thanks. Thank you, Melissa.
From NPR News, this is special coverage of Election Night 2012. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. Polls have closed in 25 states and the District of Columbia. At this early hour, NPR projects that Republican challenger Mitt Romney will win in Georgia, Indiana, Kentucky, West Virginia, and South Carolina, Oklahoma, Mississippi, and Alabama.
No surprises there. NPR also projects that President Obama will win Vermont, Connecticut, Delaware, the District of Columbia, Maryland, Massachusetts, and Rhode Island. Also no surprises there. 270 electoral votes are needed to win the presidency.
Also on the ballot, 33 Senate seats. Democrats need to win 21 of those seats to hold on to their majority in the Senate, including independent Bernie Sanders in Vermont. And NPR does now project that Sanders will win re-election there.
Ohio and Florida are two of the biggest prizes among battleground states. In Ohio tonight, there is relief among voters that the robocalls will finally stop.
It's annoying to get all the robo phone calls from the Republican Party.
Certainly, you know, made it more annoying with all the phone calls from Clint Eastwood and from Barbara Streisand and other people trying to influence our votes.
I felt like the campaign was harassing us. We had three phone calls last night.
We just heard voters from Bexley, Ohio, Mike McGrew, Greg Ehrlich, and Janet Helgeson. And after all those phone calls, she says she cast her vote for Barack Obama.
I think that Obama truly believes what he's saying, and he really has a mission as an individual. And I don't believe that's true for Mr. Romney. I think he's a fine person, but I don't think he had a calling to be changing the country for the average American.
Just thinking, what a country this is, Melissa, that people get blasé about getting phone calls from
Barbara Streisand and Clint Eastwood, yeah.
In any case, Mitt Romney got Celeste Gamble's vote in Bexley, Ohio.
Honestly, it's one of those things that you just have to go with your heart and go with your gut. I have lots of friends who are gay or lesbian, and it's a really hard choice to choose between rights for my loved ones and fiscal responsibility for my child.
And Celeste Gamble says no matter the outcome, she, like the others, will be glad when this whole thing is over, especially, she says, on Facebook.
I mean, I have hidden so many friends that I love that I just can't stand to hear them shove their opinion down my throat one more time. You know, so I'm glad to have my friends back.
In another state we're watching closely tonight, Florida, Opal Williams cast her vote for Barack Obama.
I love my president. We need him another 4 years, I feel like, because I know he didn't come into office with the world all together, and I know it may take 8 years to get it together, and I'm hoping he can do that this year.
Also, Jewel McMillan in Florida is unemployed, and she says it's influenced her vote.
President Obama's election night headquarters are in Chicago, and we've got NPR's White House correspondent Scott Horsley there. Scott?
Good to be with you, Robert.
Are you hearing anything interesting there?
Well, the president is still at his home in the Hyde Park neighborhood of Chicago. He's having dinner there with his family. His daughters flew in today after school. He and his wife came in late last night or early this morning after their last rally in Iowa. But they're going to repair to the Fairmont Hotel to watch the returns. They haven't done that yet because, obviously, the returns that we're all really interested in are still some time off.
Yep. We should say, by the way, one return. In the state of Maine, we now project Angus King, the independent, as the likely winner of the seat vacated by the retirement of Olympia Snow. It's expected that Angus King will seat and caucus with the Democrats, although he hasn't actually said that plainly. Do you get any sense at all of what the Democrats there think will be the determinant issue today in this election?
Well, of course, the states that they're going to be watching particularly closely are Ohio, Ohio above all. And one of the issues that the president's really been touting there is the rescue of the auto industry. It's a major employer in that state, both autos and auto parts. And every time he goes to Ohio, and he's spent an awful lot of time there in the waning weeks of this campaign, the president talks about the decision he made, controversial even within Michigan and Ohio at the time, to come to the rescue of General Motors and Chrysler. And, of course, a government role, an intense government role, that Mitt Romney had spoken out against.
Yes, Scott, what a remarkable arc to the presidency of Barack Obama. He undertook the auto bailout. And then in 2010, the Democratic Party was absolutely savaged in the upper Midwest, in the states that, in theory, benefited from it. But this year, as he's running for re-election, if he wins in those very same states, it's going to be because of the auto bailout.
That's right. And when you look at the polling that's been done before today in those states, that's really helped him, especially with, for example, working-class white voters, a constituency he doesn't do well with nationally, but he performs better in the upper Midwest with that constituency, and the auto rescue has to be a part of that.
I gather that Chicago will not be the scene of quite the same colossal election night rally that there was 4 years ago.
No, and maybe just as well, because the weather here is raw and drizzly and cold. So the election night watch party has moved indoors, but still to a sizable venue. We're in McCormick Place, a convention center-type facility here in Chicago. And there's not a lot of non-media types here yet, but still plenty of room to accommodate what could be a good-sized crowd.
Okay, thanks a lot, Scott.
And from one convention center to another, now to Boston and the Romney, what they're hoping is a Romney victory event at the Boston Convention and Exhibition Center, and to NPR's Ari Shapiro. Ari, you were listening to Scott Horsley talk about the mood in the Obama campaign. Mitt Romney made some surprise last-minute stops today. What do you make of the mood where you are and how they're gauging results as they come in?
They're feeling very positive, and I believe that among the campaign, from the several senior advisors I've talked to today, that they really do believe they could win tonight. It's not just bluster. They believe they may lose, but the overwhelming sense I get from them, and this comes from the candidate himself, Mitt Romney came to the back of the plane to talk to reporters this afternoon as we were flying back into Boston. The overwhelming sense I get is that they left it all on the field. They left nothing in the locker room. They waged a campaign that they're really proud of, and they might win tonight, they might lose tonight, but they feel good about the campaign they conducted.
I think Mitt Romney said something today about having written a victory speech. The only speech he said he's ever written, is that what he said?
Not the only speech he's ever written. He said, I only wrote one speech.
Yeah, he only wrote one speech.
He was asked whether he wrote two speeches, a victory and a concession speech. He said no. He said he had just finished writing it. He said it's about 1,118 words,
give or take.
I suppose, right? And he said he hadn't written a concession speech. That could be spin, but, you know, we'll see.
When you talk to the folks in the campaign, Ari, have they talked about any miscalculations they've made along the way? I mean, you mentioned they said they didn't leave anything on the field or in the locker room, whatever sports metaphor they were choosing. But any places where they thought, really, we should have put more effort into this?
In the last couple of months, the campaign adopted this sort of let Mitt be Mitt strategy, where he talked more about his personal life and things like that. I think there are some in the campaign who wish he had done that earlier. Early on, whether it was Newt Gingrich and Rick Perry calling him a vulture capitalist or the Obama campaign saying that he was an outsourcer in chief, he was sort of defined in a really harsh way that brought his approval numbers way, way down. They're back up now, almost tied, more or less, with President Obama. But I think there are some in the campaign who wish they had taken those steps a little bit earlier.
Okay. NPR's Ari Shapiro at Romney headquarters in Boston. Ari, thanks so much.
Talk to you later.
In the state of Maine, we now foresee Barack Obama, the winner of the presidential race there. It has four electoral votes. And importantly, in Maine, it appears that President Obama will carry both congressional districts, because Maine actually does divide up its electoral
along
votes.
With Nebraska, one of two along states two that states. Does, it's not winner take all.
The other big race there, though, was the Senate race for the seat vacated by the retirement of Olympia Snowe. And joining us now is the candidate whom we project as the winner, independent Angus King, the former governor. First, congratulations.
Hey, thank you, Robert. Thank you. It looks good. I haven't seen the official vote count yet, but I guess a couple of the news agencies have called it, so we'll take it from there.
Let's cut to the chase here. Are you going to caucus with the Democrats or the Republicans?
I'll be deciding that when I get down there and talk to both sides and see what the proposals are and what would make me the most effective senator from Maine.
What will you be asking? What's the question you'll be asking of the two caucuses to decide?
Well, I want to talk about how independent I can remain. My goal is to be as independent as I can be, as long as I can be, and who can honor that and still give me a nod toward a favorable committee assignment. That's really what I'm going to be talking about. And I also want to talk about whether there are some changes that can be made to the Senate rules so that the place can work better. That's the message from the people of Maine. That's what I've been hearing on the street for 8 months is, go down there and get them to talk to each other.
Are you talking about the filibuster rules there?
That would be that would certainly be at the top of the list.
So if one of the caucuses could tell you, we will support a rules change so that 40 senators or can't block something, or a single senator can't put a hold on something, you might caucus with that group on that basis?
Well, that I wouldn't say it would be the exclusive basis, but it would certainly be something that I think we should be talking about, because right now, nothing's getting done, and that's why Olympia Snowe left, and that's why I'm running, because we can't solve any of the country's problems if the institution itself is broken.
You know, Governor King, a lot of people hearing this, knowing that the Democrats virtually defunded their nominal candidate, knowing that you were running, I don't think they advertised even for her there, they think that you're perhaps exaggerating how much of a choice you face, that the default mode here would be you'd be a Democrat. Is it fair to say that unless something is said to you otherwise, you'll caucus with the Democrats?
No, you can keep asking the question. We can stay here all night, but
We're here till midnight.
At least. Well,
we're on till 3 o'clock, actually.
That decision is going to be made after some discussions in Washington over the next couple of weeks.
One question. You mentioned what Senator Snowe talked about as she decided not to run again, and that's the toxic climate in Washington. Do you have some expectation that however disgruntled she may have grown, that you have some expectation that things will be better?
Well, I'm neither naive enough nor arrogant enough to think that I can go down all by myself and fundamentally change the mood of the place. But I think you got to start somewhere, and I do think that there are a small group of sort of moderate centrist senators who are ready to try to talk across the aisle and between the parties and try to solve some of these problems. And so I'm hoping that there's can be a movement in this direction. I worked in the Senate in the 70s and actually saw it work. I saw senators agree and disagree and have partisan differences, but ultimately compromise and reach solutions and move forward for the good of the country. And we've just got to start moving back in that direction. So, again, I don't think I can do it all by myself, but I think the people of Maine believe we got to start somewhere, and tonight that looks like me.
Okay, Angus King, defiantly independent. We think
I like
Senator,
that.
You like that. We think Senator-elect from Maine, thanks for talking with us.
Yes, indeed. Good night.
Take care now. Another Senate race, a couple of them settled. Sheldon Whitehouse, the incumbent Democrat from Rhode Island. We foresee his election tonight. Also that of Bob Corker, second-term Republican from Tennessee.
You're listening to special coverage of Election Night 2012 from NPR News. From NPR News, this is special coverage of Election Night 2012. I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Robert Siegel. The polls have closed in half the states and the District of Columbia. And one thing is clear, this is going to be a long night. Turnout is heavy across the country, including the key states of Virginia, Florida, and Ohio. We can see in many other states where it's been much simpler to forecast who the winner will be. President Obama appears to be the winner in Rhode Island, Massachusetts, Illinois, Governor Romney in Alabama, Mississippi, Oklahoma, and actually no surprises whatever to report so far.
No surprises.
On the presidential
one
front.
State that Barack Obama won 4 years ago, Indiana, is now projected to be in Mitt Romney's column. But the big states, as we mentioned, Virginia, Florida, Ohio, North Carolina, another state that Barack Obama won 4 years ago, has polls have closed there. We've not called that race. New Hampshire has closed, another key battleground state.
Yes, a battleground state, and we haven't called that.
And what we want to talk about now is what's going on in New York and New Jersey, where many voters in areas that were affected by Hurricane Sandy have run into problems at the polls. Some had problems locating where they should vote. In many places, there were long lines and equipment problems that slowed things down considerably. And joining us to talk about that is NPR's Robert Smith, who is on Staten Island, New York. Robert, I gather you're in a flooded neighborhood that's still without electricity.
Yeah, the water's receded, but there's still no electricity here. And you can see people's belongings piled up in front of their homes. And right in the middle of all of this darkness is a couple of those Klieg lights that kind of use when they're repairing highways. And underneath those Klieg lights is a tent, and that is where the neighbors can vote, if they're still around. There hasn't been many people here, at least in the last few hours.
I saw images this morning, Robert, that were really quite striking, I believe, out on Long Island, where people were voting in the pitch black, voting by flashlight before the sun came up, voting in tents that had no heat but had lined up in the dark to do just that.
Yeah, I was out in the Rockaways this morning, and I saw it, and it was a little bit crazy. They had a generator there, but no fuel for the generator. They eventually had to bring in a city bus in order to keep people warm. Before and after they voted, they were trying to run shuttles. And once again, this was a voting station that had consolidated a bunch of other voting stations that had been destroyed in the Rockaways. It was absolutely crazy.
A lot of confusion in New York and in New Jersey, I gather, too, where people were allowed to vote by email, but there was a lot of frustration in trying to get that done. These are states, we should mention, that are solidly blue states, so not determinative for the presidential election, but still causing a lot of people who want to get out and vote, causing some problems.
Yes, and this email voting thing, it seemed like a great idea at the time. Oh, you know, you can stay home, especially if your house is destroyed, and vote by email. But what it meant is you had to register by email. They would send you an email. You had to print it out. You had to fax it or scan it back. Mm-hmm. And that turned out to be a bit of a mess, too. You're right. This will not influence the presidential election. But there are a lot of local elections here. And already I talked to some campaigns for state senate here in New York.
Yeah.
And they're already talking about voter disfranchisement, you know, that they may talk to lawyers tomorrow if they lose. We're going to be hearing about this election for a while, at least here locally.
Okay, that's NPR's Robert Smith in Staten Island. Robert, thanks so much.
Thanks.
And in the studio with us are E.J. Dionne of The Washington Post, Matt Continetti of The Weekly Standard, and they've been poring over exit poll results and what scant votes have already been counted. Matt, what do you make of it so far?
Well, if the exit polls are right, it looks like we're going to head for a popular electoral vote split. You look at the exit polls for nationally, and it looks basically the electorate that Romney wants. He's winning. He's at the magic number among whites, 60%. He's winning independents. The electorate is much less Democratic, according to this exit poll nationally, than it was in 2008. However, if you look at the exit poll for Ohio and the exit poll for, say, Florida, it's much more in Obama's turf, the new Obama coalition of minorities and young people. And in this case, in Ohio, the white working class, just in the bare margins, not showing up for Romney, could give the battlegrounds to Obama, the popular vote to Romney.
So you're saying you think this is going to be a been there, done that night, that it could be the flip side of 2000.
That's right.
You think it's possible from what you've seen?
Yeah. If the exit polls are right, and they're often not right.
Yeah, they're often not right. True. E.J. Dionne.
I think it's a little premature to call the popular vote yet on the basis. The exit polls suggest a very close split, and it really struck me that the exit polls suggest that if anything, this electorate is slightly less white than the electorate was 4 years ago. Romney to win needed a decline in the non-white vote, the Latino and African-American vote. That does not appear to have happened. And that
but isn't
is,
he running so much stronger among white
he's
voters?
At the magic
he is. He's making
white,
up for that.
Right, but the magic number is not good enough because the white share
but the
is
truth
not big
is,
enough.
EJ, according to exit poll, he's pulling around what McCain did among Hispanics nationally, not in the battlegrounds, nationally. And so when you combine that with the 60% of the white vote, I think that's enough for a slight edge.
Well, anyway, we'll
EJ.
See on the
we'll
popular
see.
Vote at the end of the night. I was struck by a couple of things. One is Ohio, where I do think, as Matt said, it is very important that among white working class voters, Obama is doing very well. And clearly the auto bailout was the auto rescue was a big part of it. He's carrying 45% of the whites without a college with a high school degree or less. That's often a marker for the white working class. He is overwhelming Romney among union voters, who are still a significant share. Voters in Ohio were asked, did they approve of the auto rescue or not? And they approved by close to 60% of them approved of it. Those voters were voting overwhelmingly for President Obama. The other interesting thing in terms of class and also in terms of attitudes toward Bain Capital and the like, in the national exit poll, the voters were asked, do you think the U.S. economic system generally favors the wealthy or is fair to most Americans? Favors the wealthy, 54%, fair to most Americans, 40%. So again, if
this is
nationally.
Nationally, you're
and
saying.
So if, again, if Obama does pull this out, I think that a class feeling that people say doesn't exist in the United States, and it certainly doesn't exist here to the same degree as it does in some other countries, nonetheless, that class feeling is there and it may end up hurting
the
Romney.
What do you think about that, Matthew? That indeed. What Republicans call class warfare may carry the day at the end of the night.
Yeah, it's very possible. And, you know, the Obama campaign has spent a lot of money defining Mitt Romney as the champion of the rich and the wealthy, and it seems like that message got through. Yeah, I'm also looking at one thing that's consistent between the general exit poll and the Ohio exit poll, opposition to Obamacare. And the truth is the health care law is not favored among either of these electorates, as I said. And if Obama does win by a squeaker, that could prove a liability in the years ahead for him.
Matthew Continetti of the Washington Free Beacon and the Weekly Standard, E.J. Dionne of the Washington Post and the Brookings Institution, thanks to both of you.
Good to be with
Thank you.
From NPR News, this is special coverage of Election Night 2012. I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Robert Siegel.
I think we will have a very clear idea before this night's over as to who the next president is going to be.
Some wishful thinking from Ohio's former Governor Ted Strickland.
It's special coverage from NPR News.
And, Robert, we can talk now about a result from the Connecticut Senate race.
Yes.
This is a hotly contested seat. This is the seat that vacated by independent Joe Lieberman,
right,
who's retiring, and Linda McMahon, the CEO of World Wrestling Entertainment, has spent, I think, $100 million over the course of two different campaigns to try to get elected to the Senate, has failed.
Congressman Chris Murphy
has won that race.
Has won. We foresee his victory in Connecticut.
They project him as the winner.
And that would be an effective Democratic hold of a seat, just as the win by Bill Nelson that we forecast in Florida would be another hold. So these were seats which not too long ago Republicans thought were good prospects for
pickups. And that's not turning out that way. Let's go now to NPR senior Washington editor Ron Elving to talk a little bit about the state of play in the Senate. Ron, we're not looking, again, the numbers needed for Republicans to take control of the Senate. Remind us of what they need to do.
Well, they need three to get a tie. If Mitt Romney gets elected president, then Paul Ryan as vice president could make them the majority party in the Senate by casting that tie-breaking vote as vice president. But if Mitt Romney should not win tonight, then the Republicans would need four seats takeaway in order to become the majority with 51 seats. They haven't taken one yet tonight that would really show them on the march for that big a takeaway.
And we were talking earlier with Angus King, the independent who is expected to caucus with the Democrats, would not go on the record with us as to whether that will actually happen, but that was a Republican seat held by Olympia Snow, conceivably becomes a Democratic pickup there. Let's talk a little bit, Ron, about what's going on with the presidential race, because we have a number of key battleground states that have closed now, and in none of them have we been able to project a winner. Ohio, no winner there. Virginia, New Hampshire, Florida, Pennsylvania now closed as well.
That's because they're just too close. We have called 17, 18 states, getting ready to call another one here shortly, but none of them really is of the kind that's going to tilt this race one or another, one way or the other. They're all states which we could have predicted probably a week ago. We're still looking for that big break for one candidate or another in a battleground state. And as you say, as we, we're still pretty early in the evening, as we look at these numbers, it's only 25% of the vote counted in Virginia, 31% in Florida, where, to some people's surprise, President Obama has the narrowest of leads there, just a little over a percentage point.
And that would all be contingent on which precincts those are that have reported.
Absolutely, and we'll be looking at precincts in Florida, I think, well into the evening. New Hampshire, just 6% of the vote. In Ohio, just 1%. So we're a long way from calling any of those states, and, of course, the polls haven't closed in the other battlegrounds we're looking at.
Okay, NPR Senior Washington Editor Ron Elving. Ron, thanks so much.
Thank you, Melissa.
And speaking of Florida, NPR's Greg Allen is in Orlando. That's Senator Bill Nelson's headquarters. We talked about our projection that Nelson has won re-election, and we just heard about how close the presidential race is. But, Greg, there's also news in the House races in Florida.
Right, we've got some close House races. It looks like the Senate, with Democrats, will pick up a couple of House seats here. It looks like that David Rivera, incumbent Republican, may be defeated by the Democrat, Joe Garcia. We're still waiting. It's a large lead, and that's where that's trending. David Rivera, of course, is being investigated by federal authorities for some tax and campaign finance things. Also, we have a district up in Broward County. This is Alan West's old district. He moved up the coast, and it looks like the Democrat there, Lois Frankel, looks like she's got a large lead there and favored to win over her Republican opponent, Adam Hasner.
This was the mayor of Palm Beach, the Lois Frankel, go ahead.
Yes, that's right. And there's two or three other close races now. We're watching one here in Orlando, one up in the Panhandle, where Steve Sutherland, the incumbent Republican, is facing a Democratic challenger. So other close races, Democrats right here at these headquarters are feeling very optimistic tonight.
And what are they saying about the presidential race?
Well, the call is don't get out of line. We remember 2000. If you're in line and if the race gets called, if you're in line to vote, make sure you go ahead and vote. We heard that from the head of the party here, Rod Smith, a few minutes ago, and that will be the watchword. They know how close it is, and they know that every vote counts. The number here they always talk about, as you know, Robert, is 547. That's the number of votes that George Bush used, he carried Florida by in 2000. And they don't want to see a repeat of that here if you're a Democrat.
Okay. NPR's Greg Allen in Orlando. Thanks, Greg.
You're welcome.
You're listening to special coverage of Election Night Returns from NPR News. I'm Melissa Block.
I'm Robert Siegel. And so far, no big surprises among the states in the presidential race. From NPR News, this is special coverage of Election Night 2012. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. And as you just said, Robert, no surprises yet in early returns so far this evening. President Obama doing well in northeastern states where he was expected to show his strength, and Republican challenger Mitt Romney doing well in states across the South.
But the big battleground states remain far too close to call. Polls are closed in Florida, in Virginia, and in Ohio, where turnout is reported to have been very heavy.
To give us some idea of what's on the minds of those voters, we're joined once again by Andy Kohut, president of the Pew Research Center. And Andy, we've been hearing throughout the day of heavy turnout in a lot of these battleground states and across the country. What trends are you seeing in the exit polls that are catching your eye?
Well, in Ohio, the race is close, as it was close 4 years ago. And unlike some other places, we don't see President Obama losing across the board. Yes, he has lost support among men, 5 points, and among independents, 9 points. But we see him picking up some support among females, some support among Democrats, 4 points, and some support among liberals. So it's a situation where we have an offset of some going against Obama, where Obama was 4 years ago, but is picking up support among other groups. What's interesting in Ohio is the economy. The economy is the top issue, according to voters there. But Obama, Romney doesn't win it convincingly. The people who say that the economy is the top issue, they divide their support pretty evenly between Barack Obama and Mitt Romney. And 59% of the people that were questioned by the exit poll said they approve of the auto bailout. So you can see the ways in which some of the economic factors in that state have allowed Obama to hang in there. He's not running too differently, at least in this exit poll, from his popular vote. Yeah. But exit polls aren't vote counts.
Of course. And any sense that you're seeing in the question of when people made up their minds in terms of late deciders, are they breaking one way or the other?
I haven't looked at late deciders there, but we have seen that late deciders nationally are going more in Obama's direction than in Romney's direction.
Any interesting demographic trends that you're seeing in the exits?
Yeah, I mean, there's higher black turnout in Ohio, and that is obviously helping Obama. In Florida, we see independents turning out at pretty high levels, and there's, unlike other places, there's not a trend away from Obama among independents. In fact, the two candidates run fairly well, fairly even in Florida among independent voters.
Well, a moment ago, we had a little scrap between our commentators, E.J. Dionne and Matt Continetti. The question was, is the shrinking white share of the electorate sufficiently small that it helps President Obama, or is his share of white votes so low that it doesn't matter?
Well, in Florida, for example, the white vote is, he's off by 4 points, but there's been a 3-point pickup in Latinos. The share went from 14 to 17, and Latinos support Obama by an even larger margin. So in that one, EJ and Matt were...
They split the difference.
They split the difference, more or less.
Okay. Andrew Kohut of the Pew Research Center, thanks again.
You're welcome.
And now to Ohio and NPR's national political correspondent, Don Gagne, who is at Democratic Party headquarters in Columbus. And Don, very preliminary returns coming out of Ohio, nothing definitive at all. What are you hearing from folks there?
Well, the people at this event here, it's like a very large, very pleasant cocktail party. People are standing around. There seems to be no worry in the air here, at least among this crowd. They like what they've heard from these numbers so far. They feel like they're holding their own. They feel like they've got things that help them, like an Ohio economy that's better than the national average, and an auto bailout that, as we just heard Andy say, is pretty popular here. And people are feeling good, but they have not started celebrating yet. We did hear the beginnings of a fired up, ready to go chant, but it only went about 20 seconds or so before it petered out. They're not quite ready for that yet, but they're anticipating good things.
We have not yet projected a winner in an important Senate race in Ohio, and that's the incumbent Sherrod Brown, who's up against the Republican State Treasurer Josh Mandel.
That one has been really, really hard fought, and there have been as many ads, positive and negative, and maybe I should put the emphasis on negative for that campaign as it seems there have been for the presidential race here. Again, there is a lot of confidence among Democrats that Sherrod Brown will win re-election, and again, too soon for us to make that kind of a projection, though.
Other things that strike you as you've talked to voters today and been around the state as you've been covering it so much in this last election cycle, Don?
Well, it has been really, really energized, and it continued right through today. Ohio knows that it plays this special role in American politics at the end of the election in kind of the same way that Iowa and New Hampshire do on the front end. And people here really, really appreciate that. And I saw both sides working it really, really, really hard, not just today, but certainly over the past several weeks when I've been here.
Okay, Don, thanks so much.
Thank you.
That's NPR's Don Gagne in Columbus, Ohio.
In Massachusetts, the polls closed, 40 minutes ago. In Massachusetts, I think We've already projected President Obama the winner of the presidential race, but there is, of course, a very tightly contested race for the Senate seat held by Scott Brown, the Republican, challenged by Elizabeth Warren, the Democrat. Tovia Smith is at Warren headquarters. What's going on?
Well, there were whoops and hollers here a moment ago when folks here made the announcement that Barack Obama won Massachusetts, but that was never really in doubt. We're waiting to hear. I think there's fair to say there's a bit of pins and needles on the Senate race. I got a chance a short while ago to talk to Governor Deval Patrick. He says he's cautiously confident. Folks here are hoping that Warren pulls it off. That would mean a Democrat back in this Senate seat that belonged to Senator Kennedy for so long. It would mean, you know, an unapologetic liberal back in that seat. And that's what these folks are hoping for. It turns out that this whole Scott Brown thing was just one of those rebound relationships, you know, like he was charming and voters were seduced by all his talk about bipartisanship. But folks are hoping out that hoping that it turns out that voters kind of want to go back to the kind of liberal that they'd want to take home to mom and dad. But that said, it's worth noting also here, again, this is a state where the top of the ticket, there's this wide margin, and even if Warren pulls it off, it's going to be by a lot less, and that would make it somewhat less impressive. I asked Governor Patrick about that, the difference between the two races, and he basically said, you know, Scott Brown has kept it competitive just by being a really nice guy and a great campaigner, and I heard a lot of that at the polls today. Folks saying they liked him better. One woman told me she was put off by Warren. Warren struck her as a bit of a know-it-all and too partisan, and she thought Scott Brown really would build bridges, the kind of bridges he's been talking about all along, by being, you know, a moderating voice within the GOP.
Tovia, Massachusetts also has an interesting congressional race and an incumbent Democrat in trouble.
Two interesting races. I was at polls in the 4th congressional district, Barney Frank retired from, and there's a young Kennedy trying to make his first run for office there. In the 6th district, we're waiting to see if the embattled Democrat, incumbent John Tierney, will lose his seat to a Republican challenger. That's Richard Tesei. He's an openly gay former state senator and a businessman who seems to be benefiting from the fact that his Democratic opponent has some ethics problems.
People seem to be shouting about applauding something, but we'll get to that later, Tovia. Thank you.
Okay, Robert.
That's NPR's Tovia Smith, who is in Boston at Elizabeth Warren's headquarters.
We're going now to be joined by Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz. She is the chair of the Democratic National Committee, and she joins us from Chicago. Congresswoman Wasserman Schultz, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you. Great to be with you.
Looking at some early returns from Florida, 36% of precincts counted, and again, no telling at this point of which precincts we're talking about, but Barack Obama is holding a slim lead in your state. How confident are you that that lead will hold?
Well, we've run an incredibly effective and strong ground operation in Florida. The early vote and absentee balloting, particularly in South Florida, the two counties that I represent are the most Democratic counties, Broward and Miami-Dade County. President Obama won the early and absentee balloting 72% and 66%, respectively. He, in order to win the state, he's got to run up huge pluralities there, and we had a phenomenal turnout, and he won in the early and absentee balloting overwhelmingly. So that's a good news for him. Hillsborough County, which is a bellwether county, that's in the I-4 corridor, that very strong numbers for Democratic turnout there as well. So We're optimistic, but I think it's still going to be close. We're going to watch it, I think, for a long while tonight.
Along with that heavy turnout, a number of voting problems reported through the weekend and into today, long lines. How confident are you that people who wanted to vote in Florida were able to vote?
Well, I'm relatively confident. It's really deeply disturbing what the Republicans did. Rick Scott, our governor, and the Republican legislature did everything they could to throw obstacles in the path of voters. They shrunk the number of days of early voting, shrunk the number of hours that were available to cast a ballot, shrunk the number of sites so that the lines were impossibly wrong. I mean, there's just no, it's absolutely unacceptable for voters to stand in line for 8 hours to cast a ballot on any day, whether it's election day or an early voting day. And that absolutely must change. It's undemocratic. But you know what? People were resolute. They stayed in line. They were not going to be deterred.
Congressman Wasserman Schultz, the American people has put their confidence in their approval rating for Congress at an all-time low. I mean, it's really shocking when you look at those numbers. Do you have any faith that the upcoming Congress, if it does continue the way it has, with Democrats in control of the Senate, Republicans in control of the House, that there's anything for voters across the country to look forward to in terms of bipartisanship?
Well, I heard from voters in my own district and in all across the country as I traveled for President Obama that they want us to work together. If there's anything that came out of this election, President Obama has repeatedly reached across the aisle and only to be rebuffed by Republicans only interested in one job, his. And I'm hopeful that now, after the election, you know, after tonight, Republicans and Democrats will be able to sit down together and really work on the issues that are facing us. We've got to continue to get this economy turned around, continue to create jobs. We've got a fiscal cliff that is looming, and we need to work together. I mean, that's what I think the overwhelming message tonight, whether it came from Republicans or Democrats, was that they do not want us to continue the vitriolic partisan bickering. We've got to come together and work together. And I know Democrats on President Obama's leadership will be ready and willing to do that. I hope Republicans are willing to join us.
Okay. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
That's Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz, chairman of the chairwoman of the Democratic National Committee, represents Florida's 20th district, district north of Miami.
And you're listening to special coverage of Election Night 2012. From NPR News.
From NPR News, this is special coverage of Election Night 2012. I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Robert Siegel. Polls have now closed in 26 states and the District of Columbia. All eyes are on the swing states. As we mentioned earlier, there are 33 Senate seats up for grabs. 23 of them are currently held by Democrats. And some of the Senate races that we've been able to call include these. In Florida, the incumbent Democrat Bill Nelson has won a third term. He defeated Republican challenger Connie Mack. And in Connecticut, Chris Murphy, congressman, defeated Linda McMahon, the Republican. This is the seat vacated by the independent Democrat, Joe Lieberman. And it means that a seat will remain within the Democratic caucus. And in Maine, the seat vacated by the retirement of Olympia Snow, the Republican, has been won by the independent Angus King. He's widely expected to caucus with the Democrats, but when we asked him to say as much not too long ago, he said I could ask him all night long and he wouldn't
Here's
say
one
so.
Other we haven't mentioned yet, and that's in West Virginia, Robert. The Democrat incumbent Joe Manchin, former governor of that state, has defeated the Republican challenger John Racey, who has also run before and not been successful. So that seat stays with the Democrats in West Virginia. Across the country, long lines to vote in many places. In Virginia, the polls officially closed at 7 p.m. Eastern. But the State Board of Elections has delayed the reporting of results for at least an hour, and we're an hour past that, so voters still in line would not be unduly influenced by preliminary results.
There were problems reported elsewhere, and joining us now with more on that is NPR's Pam Fessler. Pam, you've been watching several states. Let's start with Pennsylvania. There was a controversial voter ID law in that state.
That's right, Robert. This was a very controversial law, and it was very confusing after several legal battles about exactly how it should be implemented. Voters were supposed to be asked to show ID, but they did not have to have it. If they didn't have it, they were still going to be allowed to vote. And this caused a lot of confusion. Some voters complained that they were being pressured to show ID when, in fact, they didn't have to. And there were some reports that voters were actually turned away from the polls because they didn't have the required ID, although it's not very
turned away by election officials or
poll workers who were confused by the law. Everybody in the state was confused. At one point, you were supposed to show photo ID, but then later on, it was not actually required. So that caused a lot of confusion.
Other states where there were problems of that sort?
I would say that, quite frankly, there weren't as many problems as a lot of people were expecting. It was mostly the long lines. There were problems, obviously, in the New York, New Jersey area where Superstorm Sandy hit and disrupted so many communities. People were very confused about where they should go to vote and how to vote. There was a lot of confusion in New Jersey about being allowed to email or fax yes. their ballots, and then they weren't able to do it because some of the servers were down in some of the county election offices. So there were a lot of complaints there. One of the things that we didn't see were a lot of challenges by Tea Party groups. We had expected a lot.
Allegations of voter fraud?
Of voter fraud that, you know, True the Voter group in Houston had said that it was going to have an army of 1 million poll watchers on Election Day. I think it was probably more like maybe 5,000-10,000, and we really didn't see some of the confrontations that people were expecting. Some people thought that voters would actually be intimidated by some of these poll watchers.
Okay, monitoring voting issues and voting irregularities for us tonight and covering these stories in recent months. Pam Fessler, thank you.
Thank you.
And Robert, one of the Senate races that we've been tracking tonight is in the state of Indiana. This is the seat that was in the hands of Republican Richard Lugar, longtime senator from Indiana. He was defeated in the primary by Richard Murdoch, the Republican there, and Richard Murdoch going up against Congressman Joe Donnelly, the Democrat there. And we have no result to call yet, but at this point, Joe Donnelly seems to be holding a slight lead. We're going to go to NPR's Sonari Glinton, who's at Republican headquarters in Indianapolis. Sonari, what are you hearing?
Well, they're just starting to... people are really excited because here in Indiana, Mitt Romney has... You know, Indiana was called for Mitt Romney. But so that's a... That's a big excitement. It flipped from being an Obama state to a Romney state.
It was
so
very narrow Obama victory 4 years ago, yeah.
Yeah, and people are really excited about that. But there's still some excitement for the gubernatorial race, but this one Senate race is neck and neck, and about $8 million had been spent in the last week of the election to in the Murdoch race, and that sort of bled into some of the other races that have pulled some of the poll numbers for Republicans down.
Yeah. And people might remember that Richard Murdoch got in some trouble during one of the debates in Indiana when he talked about pregnancy as a result of rape being something that God intended to happen. And that breathed new life into the candidacy of the Democrat Joe Donnelly in a very red state.
Yeah, and a lot of Republican women, these Lugar Republicans especially, have been turning away from Murdoch in the last couple of days.
Okay, NPR's Sonari Glinton watching returns in Indiana, where we're tracking the Senate race in that state. Robert?
And on to New Hampshire, where NPR's Joel Rose is in Manchester. Of course, in New Hampshire, that's one of the presidential battleground states. It only has 4 electoral votes. There are 4 electoral votes that have been contested, and there's also a governor's race. What are you hearing about, Joel?
Well, Robert, I'm at the headquarters of Maggie Hassan, who's a Democratic candidate for governor. She's running against Ovid Lamontagne. And, you know, polls in that race show that that's a very close race. There are 2 congressional districts in the state that are both closely contested. And as you say, it's a presidential contest that's still too close to call. New Hampshire's, you know, known for being relevant early in the process, as I think somebody already mentioned tonight with its first in the nation primary. But here it is relevant at the end as well, because it's been a battleground state throughout the campaign, and President Obama seems to be holding a slight lead in the polls, but it's been very close, and both sides have been on the ground just in the last 48 hours here. Candidates.
If the Democrats do very well in New Hampshire, the state would be in a unique position. It is possible that by the end of tonight, there could be a female governor, 2 senators, and 2 congresswomen, 2 representatives from New Hampshire.
Right. The 2 congressional candidates on the Democratic side, Carol Shea Porter and Ann McLean Custer, are both women, and they're both running against incumbent Republican men, Frank Ginta and Charlie Bass. The Democratic candidate for governor, Maggie Hassan, is also a woman, and the 2 Senate seats, neither of which is on the ballot tonight, are both held by women. So, as you say, if the Democrats have a big sweep tonight, it could mean an all-female congressional delegation here.
The senators, of course, are the... And by the way, we are now projecting that Maggie Hassan will win the New Hampshire governor's race, is what
Well,
this just handed me. I can
tell
you.
The people in this room don't seem to know that yet.
Well, you can
spread the word. Spread the word, Joel.
You can spread the word. There,
there
it is.
There goes the tear.
I think they just heard.
Things word travels slow to New Hampshire, I think.
Okay, and,
it's a long way away.
And so we're not yet at the all five, but she, together with Senator Jeanne Shaheen, Democrat, and Senator Kelly Ayotte, Republican, some pretty serious female power there in New Hampshire.
It's a female wave potentially headed through that state. We'll wait to see what happens with those congressional races that we talked
about. Maybe
we'll
have to change the road signs to have a woman's face on them. Who knows?
It's NPR's Joel Rose in New Hampshire. Thanks so much, Joel.
Bye-bye, Joel.
And you're listening to special coverage from NPR News. Okay.